This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm John Idstein. For generations, the United States and its debt sold in the form of U.S. Treasuries have been synonymous with security. Now, though, the nation's sterling credit is tarnished. The ratings agency Standard & Poor's has downgraded the U.S. from AAA to AA+, one notch down. Coming up, we'll ask an analyst at S&P to explain the agency's decision and respond to harsh criticism of the downgrade from the White House and Capitol Hill. But first, as NPR's Tamara Keith reports, there are big questions about what the downgrade will mean for investors and for the nation.
A few years ago, it was unthinkable that the United States would have its credit downgraded. But a lot of unthinkable things have happened since then, like the global financial collapse, the European debt crisis, and a fight over the debt ceiling that took the nation to the brink of default. Tyler Cowen is a professor of economics at George Mason University.
What matters is that someone dared to downgrade, and it's a shock to American pride. It's a way of saying our government isn't working right now.
In justifying the downgrade, S&P focused on political issues, saying it wasn't sure leaders in Washington were willing to take on the difficult task of truly addressing the nation's longer-term debt issues. Cowen says this downgrade could be an opportunity.
What you need are people looking at themselves long and hard in the mirror and saying, I was partly responsible for this. How can I change? And until we do that, I think it's just going to get worse.
What's not clear is whether this shock to American pride will also come with a financial shock when the markets open on Monday morning.
The initial reaction may be quite negative.
Mark Zandi is chief economist at Moody's Analytics.
But by the end of the day, certainly by the end of the week, I don't think this is going to have a major impact.
Zandi says a lot of investors saw this downgrade coming. And he says it's important to note the other two major credit ratings agencies, his parent company Moody's and Fitch, are sticking with their AAA ratings so far.
This is an opinion, one analyst committee at a rating agency. This doesn't change anything.
He says the opinions of bond investors are what really matter. And as of last Friday, even as rumors of a downgrade swirled, they were still buying lots and lots of U.S. treasuries.
If there's any trouble anywhere on the planet, they come to the U.S. Treasury as a safe haven. And that's the most important vote, and that vote won't change, I don't think, by this opinion.
The largest investors aren't making their decisions based on what S&P says. They do their own risk analysis. But the downgrade does create some complications. Many large institutional investors have guidelines that say their money can only go into super safe AAA investments. Mohamed Alarian is CEO of PIMCO, the big investment firm that manages money for U.S. pension funds and overseas investors.
As I speak now, my colleagues are reaching out with the question to investors, what would you like to do? Giving them two options. One is maintain the holdings and change the guideline. Second, sell the holdings.
Those answers are still coming in.
My sense is that most of them will say maintain treasuries for now, until they figure out what they want to do. Because let's remember, there is nobody out there who can step in.
As Alarian put it, the U.S. used to be the only clean shirt in the drawer. Now it's the cleanest of the dirty shirts. Not perfect, but the best option. Still, he says there are other ripples to consider. Perhaps most significantly, the psychological effect of being a nation that's no longer AAA.
We are at a fragile time for confidence, for business confidence and household confidence. And this loss of AAA, which was unthinkable, will erode confidence further.
An erosion that could slow economic growth even further. The real danger of being a AA+ nation. Tamara Keith, NPR News.
As we just heard, the opinions of the major ratings agencies like S&P carry a lot of weight in the financial markets. But their reputations were damaged during the financial crisis when they awarded AAA ratings to what turned out to be toxic mortgage-backed securities. Nicola Swan is a credit analyst at Standard & Poor's. He joins us on the line from Toronto to talk about his company's action and some of the criticism it's received. Thanks for being with us, Mr. Swan.
You're welcome.
Your company's decision to downgrade U.S. debt is, to a large extent, based on your concerns about the political deadlock in the United States. In the end, though, the Congress did manage to raise the debt ceiling, but you still went ahead with the downgrade. Why?
Right. So we have never viewed the debt ceiling as the main focus of credit analysis. That was really a minor part of it to us. But where we do think the focus should be in analyzing the sovereign credit of the United States is on, there are a number of strengths, right? Going through our criteria, you have quite strong monetary flexibility and quite a strong economy. But on some of the weaknesses, you have a political environment that we believe is less conducive to policymaking that is stable and predictable than has been the case in the past. We see very little progress about how to consolidate, especially the federal budget, despite months and months of debate in Washington that has been focused really on little else. And when we compare that to what we view as most relevant AAA sovereign peers, being the UK, France, Germany, and Canada, we see substantially less progress in addressing the medium-term fiscal issues in the United States.
Now, some politicians, notably Congressman Barney Frank, a Democrat from Massachusetts, says that under no circumstances will the government allow a default, and that whatever is necessary will be done to avoid that. Congressman Frank also heavily criticized S&P's action. He says you're trying to recover your reputation, which was severely damaged during the financial crisis, by demonstrating how tough you can be. What's your response to that?
We think that we have a solid track record in sovereign ratings, and we regularly publish default studies, and these have been looked at by external observers, including the IMF, and we think that, and we're comfortable with what they've said about us. Mm-hmm.
Your firm, S&P, says it will announce some further downgrades on Monday of securities that will be impacted by your downgrade of the U.S. government debt. Can you be more specific about where those additional downgrades will take place?
I don't think that we have said exactly that we will be announcing further downgrades, but we'll be announcing the impact or not of our decision on various other rated entities. There will be some that probably would suffer a downgrade as a result of the action on the sovereign, and there are others that probably would not. Some of the sectors that we're likely to say something about include a number of insurance companies, as well as the debt of entities like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
We've been speaking with Nicolas Swan, a sovereign credit analyst at Standard & Poor's. Thanks for joining us, Mr. Swan.
You're very welcome.
Manatees have lived in the waterways along Florida's coast for millions of years. Essayist Diane Roberts recently spent a hot day on a boat reflecting on the clash between the charismatic endangered species and water-faring humans.
The two manatees look a bit like underwater sofas, a little lumpy, covered in naga hide. Every once in a while, they flick their paddle-shaped tails and move forward a few feet along the bottom of the translucent Wakulla River. Every once in a while, they come up to breathe, their noses sticking up just above the surface, serene, curious, and unhurried. All they want is some aquatic weeds to eat and some safe water to swim in. They are strict vegetarians, live to be 50 or 60 years old, and have no natural predators, unless you count us. There are only about 5,000 manatees left in Florida. They are on the verge of extinction because people like to play Miami Vice with powerboats roaring around at top speed in our rivers and bays. I've lived here my whole life, and I've never seen a manatee that didn't have propeller scars on its back. Sometimes when there's a bad winter, they can die of cold stress, but too often they die a violent death, cut to pieces by propeller blades. Manatees have swum in Florida waters for at least 3 million years. They have been around far longer than we have, and they know how to take it easy, especially during the summer when it's 100 degrees and as humid as the inside of a wet wool sock. They weigh 1,000 pounds on average, but since they're 10 or 12 feet long, they carry it well. Indeed, the first Europeans to encounter them in the green shallows of the Caribbean thought they were mermaids, portly mermaids with whiskers. Sailing near what is now the Dominican Republic in January 1493, Christopher Columbus wrote in his journal that these mermaids are not half as beautiful as they are painted. Actually, I find them quite lovely, with dark, soulful eyes and plain, honest faces. Perhaps manatees, unlike humans, take a long view. They are kissing cousins of elephants, derived from a land mammal which decided to return to the sea 50 million years ago, trading its forelegs for flippers. Perhaps they thought the water was their best bet for survival. We watch them floating there in the river, 7, maybe 8 feet down. They roll around each other, playing, then go back to just hanging there in the limpid water. Suddenly they swim up toward the surface, looking at us with their ancient eyes. Maybe they're wondering why we don't join them down there. There's plenty of eelgrass for everybody.
Diane Roberts teaches creative writing at Florida State University in Tallahassee. This is NPR News. During our stay in Los Angeles this past week, we encountered a preservation effort of a different sort. Some 300 dinosaur specimens on display at the new Dinosaur Hall at LA County's Natural History Museum. At the center of the exhibit are three Tyrannosaurus rex skeletons, including the youngest known T-Rex fossil in the world. This is a hands-on display with interactive games where children can play paleontologist, and visitors are greeted with the simulated sound of a dinosaur's roar. Curator and paleontologist Luis Chiappe directs the museum's Dinosaur Institute.
There are three T-Rexes of different sizes, and we're very pleased that we can show it, and we can show the baby that was estimated to have died at the age of 2 and is about 10 feet long, the juvenile that's about 20 feet long and died at the age of 14, and the subadult or older teenage and that died at the age of 17 and it's about 30 feet long.
It's huge and ferocious.
They are, and the way they are arranged here, they are arranged around a carcass of a duck-billed dinosaur, what we know was part of the meal of Tyrannosaurus rex, and we use this display to talk about both growth on the one hand and behavior on the other hand.
The exhibit has a modern sensibility. The hall is washed in natural light. Immense dinosaur skeletons are mounted atop sleek black platforms with poses that are both intimidating and breathtaking. Most of the dinosaur skeletons on display here are real. They aren't just casts. And Chiappe collected some of them himself in the Utah desert. He says instead of organizing the exhibit chronologically, he decided to present the fossils in a way that highlights what we already know about dinosaurs and what's left to learn.
Questions that both the public and the scientists ask about these animals. How did they behave, or how did they grow, or how did they walk? And it's really all about how do we know what we know.
How much do we know?
We know quite a lot about them, but there's also a lot that we do not know about them. It's something that we like to highlight whenever is necessary because it's something that inspires. It's something that kids may come here and they may leave this exhibit thinking, maybe I'll be the one who finds the clues that can provide an answer to this question that we don't have one today.
And on our visit, we saw plenty of children, for whom these near-mythical prehistoric animals are endlessly fascinating.
So, can you tell us your name?
Dante Lewis Jr.
And how old are you?
10.
What's your favorite dinosaur?
The Tyrannosaurus rex.
Well, have you seen any here?
That family of them over there.
Right there, a family of T-Rexes. Pretty exciting.
A mother and her young.
So why are you so fascinated by them?
Because when I grow up, I want to be a paleontologist.
You do? Very cool. Very cool.
But our collective fascination with dinosaurs can often lead to misconceptions. Again, the exhibit's curator, Luis Chiappe.
I think one of the big misconceptions that people have about dinosaurs is that essentially every animal or every large reptile that lived during the age of the dinosaurs was a dinosaur. And that's not really the case. And this gallery illustrates a number of, say, the ancient marine animals, marine reptiles that lived during the age of the dinosaurs and were not dinosaurs. Or also another misconception is the idea that all dinosaurs lived and died at the same time. And this exhibit also shows how dinosaurs became extinct at different times. For example, take two iconic dinosaurs, Triceratops and Stegosaurus. They lived 85 million years apart. We only live 65 million years apart from Triceratops. So in a time context, Triceratops is closer to us, or we're closer to Triceratops than Triceratops to Stegosaurus.
One of the movie conceits, of course, is that dinosaurs and humans existed together. But that's not the case, of course.
Well, we live with 10,000 species of dinosaurs, but they're not the dinosaurs that lived during the age of the dinosaurs millions of years ago. They're the birds. And throughout this exhibit, we highlight very clearly that there's plenty of evidence indicating that birds are the descendants of dinosaurs, that therefore dinosaurs are not extinct, and that birds are living dinosaurs.
That's curator Luis Chiappe. You can see images of the dinosaurs on display at LA's Natural History Museum by visiting our website, npr.org.
You're listening to Weekend Edition from NPR News.